The Tigervan Chronicles by Richard Fife. Chapter 9. Family. Gavriel pushed past the curtain and into Marcus's quarters. The Revenant was still asleep, lying with his real hand across his chest, but otherwise prone. His covers were bunched up and thrown across the room, and they looked sweat-sodden besides, not that Gavriel could tell in the dim light. He edged a little closer and looked at the other man's face. In the peace of sleep, Gavriel realized how young Marcus really was. For all the scowling and frowning the man did, he could have passed more for Gavriel Sr. As stood, he was probably quite a few years younger. If he really did join the army a decade ago, he might have had to lie about his age to do it. Gavriel's eyes were drawn to the intricate metal work and gears of Marcus's newer parts. It reminded him a bit of Brian's Praydon-be-taken cat, but where the cat was actually a fairly delicate piece of machinery, Gavriel had seen what the Revenant could do. From shrug off a bullet to crush bone like it was paper, and all this amazing power could be hidden under clothes and only took a tank the size of a canteen to run. It boggled his mind. Marcus implied that he could feel with his new parts just as well as his old parts, too. If that was not proof enough of the devilry of that cursed spike in his head, Gavriel did not know what was. He reached down slowly to touch Marcus's arm near the elbow, but stopped when a knife was pressed against his neck. His eyes flicked up to Marcus's face. "Been awake the entire time, eh?" Marcus took a deep breath and pulled the knife, held with his real hand, away. "No. Soldiers just sleep light. Occupational hazard, you understand. You're lucky I didn't stick you like a pig, you know. What are you doing in my room?" "Brian just got a job," Gavriel said. "Good pay, and he needs all of us." "It couldn't wait until I woke up?" Marcus popped his neck and started to reach around his body to twist valves. "What time is it?" 6 in the morning, Gavriel said. "And no, not really. This is going to be a day job, and we need to get moving soon." "What is this job, exactly?" "Don't know," Gavriel said. "The old weasel just got back and told me to round everyone up. You know just as much as I do right now." "Right," Marcus said. "I'll be there in a bit. Just let me warm up." Gavriel stood and looked Marcus over one more time. "You turn yourself off like that every night?" "Yeah," Marcus said. "If I had better steam, I wouldn't, but right now, I might not last the night. I'd rather take a few minutes to be up and moving than die in my sleep. And, as I think you can tell, I'm hardly defenseless." "Yeah." Gavriel turned and pushed past the curtain. "Hardly defenseless." He rubbed his neck where Marcus had held the knife. Where had he even been hiding that thing? Did he sleep with it under his hand? He shook his head and walked back over to the gang's hall. He had figured Marcus might need to warm up, as he put it, so he had gone to wake him first. Without really thinking, he poked his head into Norrin's old room. The turncoat lockpick still had a small clutter of things about the room, despite the weeks since he had left. In all truth, it should have probably been Marcus's room now, but Brian was dragging his feet on letting the Revenant move over to the gang's hall. Not that Gavriel minded. He did not relish the thought of sleeping any closer to the Revenant than he had to. He moved next to Kira's room and poked his head in past the curtain. Kira was already up and dressed, and she had a small derringer pointed at Gabriel's forehead. "Aw, what's that about?" "I know why you just poked your head in, you pig," she said. "You could have asked first." "Brian said to not be too loud about it," he said. "Didn't want me to disturb the urchins who are still dozing." "Brian," she said. "What is this about?" "Meet in the kitchen," he said. "Brian has Cook brewing some coffee." Before he could respond, he moved to the next curtain. For the rest of the rooms, he just knocked on the wood next to the curtain and told them to get up and get to the kitchen. No use taking too long about it. Groggy and angry moans answered him except in Vlad's room, which was silent. He poked his head in, and not for the first time, he felt like he had stepped into another world. Furs covered the floor and wall, and a hide was stretched across the ceiling. He was surprised the furniture was actually made of wood instead of bones. And the small distillery the strange man operated filled one corner. The man himself, though, was nowhere to be seen. Gavriel grunted and made his way to the kitchen, where he found the man leaning against a wall and staring into his coffee mug. "Morning, Vlad," Gavriel said. "No, I haven't. Yes, it would. Good thing you weren't." Vlad shrugged and took a sip of his nearly black coffee. "Ah, but why?" "Because Brian told us to," Gavriel said. Don't go off anywhere. The rest should be here shortly. Gavriel had poured his own coffee and filled a plate with some bread and cheese by the time the rest of the gang showed up. Not surprisingly, Kira arrived last, even after Marcus. Gavriel would have to talk to Brian about her attitude. Not that it would do much good. Brian doted on her like a proud father and turned a blind eye to her trumped-up opinion of herself. To be fair, though, she was not technically the last person to arrive. No, that honor went to Brian himself, who had woken Gavriel up and disappeared into his office wearing the same stupid satchel that he had across his shoulder now. Now the same man who had been in such a rush strolled into the kitchen, smiled, and said soft good mornings to everyone, poured a coffee, then walked over to lean next to Gavriel as if he was waiting on something as well. Fortunately, Kira blew up at him before Gavriel had a chance. "What's this about?" she said. "We have a job that is extremely time-sensitive," he said, "and one that has sadly very short notice, but luckily enough of a payoff to compensate." "Stop trying to sell us and just tell us," Margot said. "It better be good. I was planning to work the Royal District today." "If you aren't attached to your fingers, I could have helped easier," Vlad said. "But I had plans for today, too, boss. We signed up for nights in advance notice." "Payout is 5,000," Brian said. "That's advance enough for me," Vlad said. Gavriel spit his coffee out. "5? What harebrained plan have you got us tied up in, Saltine?" "Transport," Brian said. "Our employer wants us to secure a satchel from a ship coming into port. It will be guarded by both private security and constables, and they will not give it up easily." "Then how do you plan on us getting it?" Kira said. "I'd imagine the same way we get anything," Margot said. "Steal it." Kira shot a glower at Margot, but then shrugged and looked back at Brian. What was that about? Gavriel ran a hand over his scalp, then looked to Brian. "Well?" "A decoy," Brian said. "Gavriel, Vlad, and Gust will take a decoy satchel, steal the real one, and then run off with the fake while in truth ditching the real one where the second team can get it. Kira, Marcus, and Margot will be that second team. Likely there will still be constables or security about, but you should have an easier time of it. You will deliver the satchel to a house in Uptown." "Uptown," Vlad said. "This is for the rebels, then?" Brian hesitated. "Yes." "What's in this satchel that's worth 5,000?" Marcus said. Brian took the satchel off his shoulder and put it on the table. When he had been wearing it, the imprint on the leather had been hidden, but now the Meister's gear and lightning was clear as day. "This is the duplicate Gavriel's team will use. Any other questions before I get into the specifics?" Brian said. Gavriel crossed his arms. "Should we be expecting that bastard that killed Jack?" Brian frowned. "I don't know, but be ready for him. Anything else? No? Good." He opened the satchel and pulled out a map of Docktown. "To the details." As Brian spoke, Gavriel had to admit, it was a good plan. Nothing too fancy, but enough going on that it was not easy to predict. And that, he remembered, was why he put up with the eccentric man. Harebrained caper or not, Brian could put a plan together that would work. And that was also why Brian put up with Gavriel. No one else was crazy enough to actually carry Brian's plans through. Gavriel looked the map over one last time after Brian finished, committing the timing and placements to memory. "Right then, we don't have much time. Let's move." Gavriel wheeled around a corner and pulled Vlad after him. Bullets whizzed through the air, and ahead of them, Gust was constantly muttering what could have been prayers to Trona or a string of swears foul enough to make a dead sailor blush. "Well, this is fun," Vlad said. Gus looked back with a glare, then kept moving. Gavriel laughed. "I don't think your cheery outlook is shared, my friend." "Bah," Vlad said. "Gus is having a blast, too. I've never seen him move so quick, so lively. Your blood has to be pumping to move like that." "Or you at least want to keep it pumping," Gavriel said. "Come on, we're almost to the drop point." Gavriel adjusted the satchel to emphasize his point, and Vlad shrugged. At the end of the alley, the warehouses gave way to an open shipyard. Several vessels, wrapped in scaffolding and looking more like wind-blasted carcasses than ships, filled the yard, and more in the later phases of construction poked out of large bay doors of surrounding buildings. The drop point was in one of the skeletal hulls, any of them, really. Kira's team was on a nearby roof, watching. Unfortunately, there were also plenty enough workers moving about, far more than Brian had anticipated in his plan. They needed to somehow distract all of them long enough for Gavriel to make the switch. The ruse would hardly work if someone else saw them drop the bag and either took it themselves or told the constables. As if to punctuate the thought, a shout came from somewhere behind them, from the private security, most likely. The constables had been easy enough to sneak past, but those black-coated guards had been another matter entirely. They had to force through them on the boat and might have left one dead besides. Sadly, the bastard who killed Jack was not among them. Gavriel had a wooden club hanging from his belt just for the occasion. He glanced back and tried to judge how close the shouts were. How in Trona's name are we supposed to get all those workers away from the drop?
You could put on a dress, Vlad said. Gavriel grunted. I'm not going to live that down, am I?
Not when you are the one who insists on telling the story all the time, Vlad said. I guess I could blow one of the ships up.
Gavriel blinked. That's too flashy. Brian wants us to be high profile, not Tyjervin's most wanted.
But you can just blow a ship up? Right now?
Vlad looked at him as if he was simple. You can't?
Gavriel shook his head. Think of something else. You're the expert on distractions.
Why does everyone think this?
The shouts were getting closer and Gavriel scowled.
Vlad, just do something.
Fine, fine, he said. But in the spirit of the plan, I need a decoy.
Gust, Gavriel said.
Gust looked from Gavriel to Vlad and back.
No.
Oh, look at that, Vlad said. He knows Santashin.
Fine, Gavriel said. You know where to stash the satchel? Gust nodded, and Gavriel handed him the satchels, both real and fake. Don't get them mixed up, and make sure Kira can see you from the south roof, and... Gust took the satchels, stuffed the real one in his coat, and put the fake one over his shoulder, then cut Gavriel off with a gesture and said something in Krellin. Gavriel was not sure, but he thought it meant calm down. Gust then slinked into the shipyard, keeping to what shadows there were and out of sight.
Oh, I guess not, Vlad said. Anyway, follow me.
Vlad led them around the shipyard and stopped when they were near the north side.
All right, this is going to be like the Tresling Gardens job.
I am not wearing a dress, Gavriel said. I don't care if you have one my size in that ridiculous coat of yours.
I know. I just need you to go cause a small ruckus right there,
Vlad pointed.
That's it.
A small ruckus?
Pick a fight, Vlad said. Claim one of them stole your favorite dress. I don't know. Just get that group there to look at you and not at what they are doing.
How is that like the Tresling Gardens job, Gavriel said. Are you going to wear a dress?
No, Vlad rubbed his beard.
You'll see. Just go. We don't have much time, yes?
Gavriel sighed and marched down to the group of workmen. The closest one of them was stooped over a makeshift workbench, and Gavriel figured he would do.
Hey, you, he said. You raped my sister.
The man stood up, and Gavriel realized he had picked someone who was almost the same size as he was. The workman looked Gavriel over and laughed.
You're the brother she was crying about? Go home before you get hurt.
Gavriel blinked. He had not expected that answer. He had also forgotten that the lewd stories about Docktown were not just stories. He balled his fist.
You son of a whore!
He jumped at the workman, landing a solid blow on the man's chin while catching the man's fist with his other hand. The workman stumbled back, and Gavriel saw the rest of the crew turn to watch, although a few had picked up links of steel or hammers as well.
Great. He had meant to put off the actual fight and just bluster and make a scene, but if it was one thing he could not abide, it was a rapist. A smug rapist was worse.
He drew his revolvers and pulled the hammers back as he trained them on the group.
Who wants some?
The workman hesitated at the sight of the guns, and the first man rubbed his chin and laughed.
Oh, you got yourself a pair of guns and think you can take on the world, eh?
Instead of answering, Gavriel shot the man's kneecap. The workman collapsed with a scream.
Where was Vlad's distraction?
That Gavriel was willing to shoot would keep the crew at bay, but it would also attract a lot of attention Gavriel did not want right now. He could already hear men from other crews shouting and getting closer.
All right, Gavriel said. Well, this isn't where I wanted to be.
The workman gave him confused looks, but before any could question him, an explosion echoed off the half-completed hulls, followed by the loud groan of straining steel. Gavriel looked up past the crew, and they turned around to see the ship they had been working on listing to the side as the scaffolding around it collapsed and burned. Gavriel swore and ran. He glanced back and saw that the workmen were too concerned with the ship that was about to fall over to give chase, so he took the time to holster his guns and then went looking for Vlad. He found the man not too far from where he had left him. "I said to not blow any of the ships up."
"That wasn't a ship," Vlad said. "It was a cutter."
"Same thing," Gavriel said.
"No, not really. Besides, I didn't blow the cutter up either. I blew up the scaffolding. The cutter just happened to..."
He paused as a loud crash reverberated through the yard.
"Fall over."
Gavriel rubbed his temples.
"And how was that anything like the Tresling Gardens job?"
"Oh, it wasn't," Vlad said. "Come on, let's go get Gust. We still need to lead those guards on a jolly chase before we escape, yes?"
Gavriel sighed and threw his arms up. "Fine, let's go."
Marcus peeked over the ledge and down to the busy shipyard below. How Gavriel was supposed to drop the satchel off without being seen in that would be quite the trick. Kira touched his shoulder.
"Marcus, get down. Someone will see you."
"I know what I'm doing, Kira," he said. "It isn't like I didn't do this kind of thing in the war all the time."
"Well, yeah," Margot said, "but you also lost both your legs and an arm doing it. Not a good track record."
Marcus stooped back down and glowered at the shorter woman. "I actually didn't start doing this kind of work until after I was reclaimed. I was injured in an explosion."
"You still need to stay down," Kira said. "I'm sure we'll know with the rest of the shipyard when Gavriel is here."
"Kira, just leave off," Marcus said.
"Then don't go screwing this up," Kira said.
Margot laughed and leaned back against the small water tank.
"Oh, lovebirds are going to have a fight."
Kira looked like she wanted to snap Margot's head off, but instead just frowned and looked away. Margot chuckled again and gave Marcus a coy smile.
"We aren't lovebirds," Marcus said, then turned to Kira. "And what is with you? You've been either busting my chops or ignoring me for weeks. Don't tell me you're still sore over the thieves' race."
Kira turned back to him.
"The race? What?"
"I know you're mad about me getting to run in the race," he said. "But honestly, can't you just let it go? I already have it bad enough with Gavriel and Brian thinking I'm unreliable after I didn't kill that man."
Kira furrowed her brow.
"Why would you think I'm upset over the race?"
"You didn't want me to run," Marcus said. "You didn't think I deserved to."
"Marcus," she said, "stop being an idiot. You proved you deserved to run by helping us win. You earned that ring just as much as I did."
"Then why have you been ignoring me?" he said. "You've barely said two words to me since the race that haven't been criticism.
What did I do?"
"I've just been busy with other things, Marcus," she said.
"I'd say I'm sorry that you feel that I'm ignoring you, but it's really all in your head. It doesn't help that you've gotten all broody and are always at the church or out with your little soldier friend."
"It's not like anyone is suggesting other things for me to do," Marcus said.
"Marcus, sweetheart," Margot said, "you need to calm down. Besides, Kira really isn't upset with you. She's just been spending all her free time stalking the Tider boy she knocked out."
"Margot!"
Kira stood halfway up, then dropped back down with a nervous glance to the parapet and shipyard beyond.
"You said
that you owed me," she said, "and I decided you owed me a good laugh."
Marcus glanced at Margot, then back to Kira.
"The Tider boy?" A gunshot echoed below, and Marcus looked back over the low wall. The groups of workmen were looking north, towards where the shot had come from, but only a few were moving to investigate. No doubt Gavriel was involved, but Marcus hoped that he did not expect a single gunshot to be distraction enough.
"Don't tell me that's it," Margot said.
An explosion sent flames flying into the sky from the far north side of the shipyard, and Marcus fell backwards in shock as Margot squealed in glee and Kira just stared. When he had stood back up, it was to see the workmen running towards the commotion, and not a one of them seeing Gust running from the shadows behind them with the satchel over his shoulder. Gust passed the barely begun frame of a ship and shoved another satchel from inside his coat behind a plate of the half-riveted hull. Soon as he did, he ran to the east, although he paused when two black-coated men appeared from the alley to the south. The men pointed at Gust, and he bolted away. The men quickly followed.
"Well, that's going smoothly."
Margot smiled as the sound of metal crunching and crashing filled the air.
"I'll go fetch the satchel. You kids keep each other company."
Before Marcus could say anything, Margot hopped onto the fire escape and scurried down to the shipyard. Marcus kept an eye out for trouble, but glanced back to Kira. "So you know him, don't you? The Titer boy." Kira crossed her arms and looked down at the shipyard. "It's none of your business, Marcus. Please, just forget about it." "Is he your lover?" Marcus said. "And now he's upset with you for breaking into his house and knocking him out? Is that how you knew so much about the manor?" "You have quite the imagination," she said. "He isn't my lover." "Then why have you been stalking him?" She sighed. "I'm not stalking him. Not anymore." "But why were you?"
"Oh, fine," she said. "I guess no use hiding it, since Margot is probably just going to try and tell everyone else about him when it tickles her fancy." "He's my brother, okay?"
Marcus blinked. "You're... wait, what?"
"He's my brother," she said. "I was born in that house, but I ran away years ago and changed my name. I always regretted having to leave him behind, but I was barely able to escape myself. So... I was trying to talk to him, but he had a bodyguard with him all the time. I finally got past the old codger, but I almost wish I hadn't. Douglas isn't the innocent baby brother I left behind. He's grown up into his father."
"Oh," he said. I'm sorry. I don't really know what to say."
Kira frowned. "I don't need your sympathy. I chose this life for myself, and finding out about him is hardly the worst I've suffered."
Marcus chewed his lip, trying to think of something to say, and Margot popped back onto the roof, satchel in hand. She looked them over and smiled.
"Have the lovebirds kissed and made up? No?
Well, tough. Time to get moving. I have 5,000 quid in my hands, kids.
Time to go." Kira gave Marcus an unreadable look and followed Margot to the other side of the roof. Marcus fell in step behind her. Brian looked at the modest downtown flats, sat down his briefcase, and checked his pocket watch. He was on time, but it was always good to check, especially with these types. He picked the briefcase back up and walked into the building. An old man sat behind a desk in the entry hall and looked Brian over with a critical eye. "May I help you, sir?"
"I have an appointment with Mr. Jenkin," Brian said. "The name is Saltin."
"I'll let Mr. Jenkin know you are here." The man stood and went down a nearby corridor. He returned before long. "This way." Brian followed the man deeper into the building. The man knocked on a door, then opened it and gestured for Brian to enter. Inside the flat, three men were standing around a table in the main room. The first, a man as tall and broad as Gavriel and with a long but well-groomed beard, gestured to the table.
"I am Mikhail Jenkin, Mr. Saltin. You have what we sent you for?"
Brian knew who the man was, the foreign-born leader of the rebellion. Of course, it was best to let him have his pretensions of mystery. He was not a noble, but Brian had heard he could be just as picky. Brian put the briefcase on the table.
"The documents from the satchel," Brian said.
The man to the left, a tall, narrow-built fellow, popped the briefcase open and leafed through the papers, which appeared to be schematics of some sort. As the man read, Brian noticed he was wearing a Meister's bracer, although without a sigil, and a shock rod was sheathed at his side.
"Meister Elector Senate, I presume?" Brian said.
"High Meister," the man said. "The rightful High Meister."
"Then it is not Tesma?" Brian said.
"He's a usurper and a thief," Lecter said. "I am still High Meister, even if the guild does not realize it."
"Calm down, Lecter," the third man said. "Are those what we wanted?"
"You're one to talk, Arik." Lecter looked the papers over a second quick time. "Yes, they're all here."
"Lord Spears," Brian said. "A pleasure to make your acquaintance. Might I ask, what was the purpose of the double decoy you insisted I set up in addition to retrieving these papers?"
Arik caressed the prosthetic hook that acted as his left hand with his right. "Tesma is going to know we stole these papers, but we'd much rather he thought it was done by an elaborate heist than by a spy aboard his trusted vessel."
"He stole from me," Lecter said. "I want to return the favor tenfold."
"You have an odd sense of karma, my friend," Mikhail said. "Regardless, Mr. Saltin, thank you for your assistance. Our agents have told us you are trustworthy, and I am glad to see it is so. I trust you will be amicable to future work?"
"Long as the pay is right," Brian said.
"Speaking of which..." Arik reached down beside him and pulled a burlap sack onto the table. 5,000, as promised. Brian gave the man an apologetic smile, opened the bag, and checked a few straps to be sure as he transferred the money to the briefcase. Sure enough, if there was not 5,000 in the bag, it would be a close thing. "Thank you, gentlemen, my lord," Brian said. "I look forward to future opportunities for us to work together." "We'll be in touch," Mikhail said. Brian nodded to all the men and let himself out. He had the money, and the job went without a hitch. At least he hoped everything in Docktown was proceeding well. He had a mild pang of regret at having fooled the gang into thinking they were honestly stealing the papers, but it was justified, in the end. He needed them to be convincing. The money would soothe any ruffled feathers, though. He nodded to the doorman and went back into the street. Just another man about business. Just business. But after having met his employers, he was not quite so sure. Meister Sinnott had been the ultimate client in the Dunny Manor fiasco, but was he the cause of that fiasco? It did not quite make sense, and while Brian did not believe in coincidence, this almost seemed too convenient. He returned to the hole, preoccupied by his thoughts. Marcus and Kira stood outside of the moderate uptown townhouse, trying to not look conspicuous, while Margot was inside. She had insisted on being the one to hand the satchel over to the rebels. Perhaps she was just trying to give Marcus time to talk to Kira again in private. They had not said a word to each other since Margot had reappeared. If that was the case, her brilliant plan was not working. Kira, at least, was not going to speak first. He took a deep breath. "Kira, thank you," she said.
"I... what?"
"Thank you for not being upset with me for keeping the secret. Not that I want or need your sympathy, but I guess it's better than you being angry or thinking I was suddenly different." "Well, it doesn't really change who you are," he said.
"I'm a noble."
She rubbed her forearm, perhaps trying to feel the Nautilus tattoo underneath. "I'm not really some sewer rat that is trying to scrape by. A lot of people would be upset with that." "I know what it is to pretend to be something you aren't," he said. "And to wonder what the people you call friends would think of you if you ever told them the truth. But I also know that I was never a different person because of it. Are you?"
"I don't know," she said. "Until now, only Brian knew who I was, and he didn't treat me any different. It doesn't change the fact of my birth."
"And what is birth?" He gestured around to the houses. "Noble or sewer rats, and Tashin or Adervinian. In the end, we're all people. And it isn't like you can just give up this life and go back to being a noble, just like I can't give it up and go back to being a soldier."
"Thank you, Marcus." She smiled and turned away.
"You're from Tigervin, right? Do you have any family in the city?" He took a sharp breath, and she turned back around.
"Well?"
"Yes," he said. "My parents have a house not 10 minutes from here. I have a sister, too, although she is probably married and moved out. I haven't seen any of them for 10 years.
"Why haven't you gone by?"
"They probably think I died in the war," he said. "I don't see any reason to give them false hope that I didn't."
"But, Kira, I am not the man I was when I left. Not even by half."
He held up his right hand.
"They wouldn't understand this. Not the how or the why of it. It's better that they think I died."
She crossed her arms. "Didn't you just get done saying people are people?"
"And didn't you just get done believing otherwise?" he said. "You can sympathize. They would just see a monster with their son's face."
A blood-curdling scream came from inside, and Marcus looked up to see Margot storming out of the house, satchel still in hand. It was open now, and a bundle of papers were half-hanging out of it. He could not be sure, but Marcus would swear they were all blank.
"Did Gus give us the wrong satchel?" Marcus said.
"Oh, he gave us the right satchel. We were a decoy," Margot said. "There's no one in there. Not a bloody single person."
"What? Why?" Kira said.
"I don't know," Margot said, "but I know Brian is behind it. I'm going to skin that weasel, I swear it. No one makes a fool of Margot Puccini and gets away with it."
She stormed off back towards the slums, and Marcus looked at Kira.
"Should we try and stop her?"
"I was thinking maybe we could hold Brian down for her."
Kira gave Marcus a mischievous smile.
"Either way, I guess we'd better follow her."
Kira started after Margot, and Marcus chased after them both, laughing.